When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
We think too short-term with our goals. We go, I want my kid to do this at 18. No, you don't. Because why do you care if your kid goes to college? So that they're successful later. If you're the only reason that they're successful now, then that's the only reason that they're going to be successful on the road. So you don't actually care. And this is the thing, like, most parents are just surviving, and that's the problem.
Yo, yo, welcome back to the cast. Your girl Lauren here. And all right, be honest. Have you ever bribed your kid to put their shoes on, been like, yo, I'll give you some chocolate if you put your shoes or your jackets on, or yo, I'm gonna call Santa Claus if you don't go to after sleep? You know, we've been there. Or maybe you threaten them, like pretending like you're gonna leave the park, like they're at the playground, they don't want to leave. I'm like, okay, see ya. And you start to walk away. Girl, I've done that so many times. That never works. But anyways, there's no judgments. I've been there, done that. And if you ever even lost your cool or used a punishment you swore you wouldn't do or felt like nothing you try actually works, I've done this with my teen a little bit lately where I yell or say something. I'm like, dang, you know, and you feel that guilt. But anyways, if you've ever been there in any of these situations, this episode is for you, okay? Today, we're diving into punishment-free parenting, what it actually means, why it's not just another way of saying, let your kids do whatever they want, or how to gentle parent. Gentle parent, I think, means so many different things that aren't always actionable because it's so all-encompassing and I think used just so loosely. This is not that, okay? What I've learned on this episode is how to get our kids to actually listen without losing my mind in the process. And I couldn't have a better guest for this other than John Fogel. All right. John is a parenting researcher, husband, dad of four, and he keeps it real. He's built a following of over 1.5 million by making brain science and psychology actually useful for us parents who are in the trenches, y'all, because we in the trenches. Okay. If you know, you know. He's the author of Punishment-Free Parenting, the brain-based way to raise kids without raising your voice. He's the host of the Whole Parent podcast and the founder of Whole Parent Academy, where he's helped thousands of parents ditch the power struggles and build relationships that actually work. But what I love most about this episode and John is that he's not all about the perfect parenting. I don't know how many times y'all have scrolled the internet or social media and you got some expert telling you this is what works, and they might have one example that I'm like, dang, why can they do it so easily? Gosh, they must be perfect, or they at least are like 80% perfect all of the time. Nah, we ain't about that. We're just keeping it real. No one is perfect, and we are, and anybody says that they are is lying. So I just like the relatability of this episode because it's not going to make you feel like a shitty parent. In this episode, though, we break down why punishment-free parenting is not about letting your kids do whatever the heck they think they're going to do, what you do when your kids are losing it, and how you can react before you snap, what to do when you snap, if and when, because we all snap sometimes and that comeback can be a little awkward, but how do you apologize? What does that look like? And how to actually get your kids to listen without threats or bribes. I think one surprise topic that I didn't expect to chat with John about today was toddlers, yes, but also my teen. Y'all, he just put in perspective a lot of the ways that I'm addressing my teen because I'm, you know, trying to make sure that he's going to be a successful adult because he leaves the house in a few years. And I've been thinking about it all wrong. And it's a similar way of how we should be thinking about when we raise our toddlers. So I had at least 2 to 3 aha moments in this episode that I'm implementing in my parenting right now. And I hope y'all do the same. So without further ado, let's do it. This is That Twin Mama Podcast. But hey, you don't have to be a twin mom to be here. I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. So whether you are new, soon to be, or seasoned parent, or maybe you just hope to have kids someday, I promise you'll find something to love, learn from, or laugh at in each episode. I'm your host, Lauren Verdi. Let's do it. All right, y'all. Yo, yo. Welcome to That Twin Mama Podcast. We got a great guest today. John Fogel is in the building. John, it's great to meet you. For the listeners who have not discovered the Whole Parent or punishment-free parenting and everything that you're doing, can you just tell listeners who you are, a little bit about you? What
yeah,
do you want them to know?
Totally. Thank you, Lauren. And I'm so grateful to be here. I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of weeks now and just vibing with it. And I feel like it's so helpful to hear your perspective as a mom in this space. And I'm a dad. I'm also a parenting researcher. So I study parenting. And my whole thing has been trying to understand parenting from kind of hacking parenting. So going back to the neuroscience, the fundamental underpinnings of why we do what we do as parents, and asking the question, like, are we doing this the most effective way? And I know that it's kind of conspiratorial thinking to be like, oh, everything is not what we think. But what I do is I don't come up with very much that's new. Right. I bring in what neuroscientists, behavioral neuroscientists, psychologists, psychiatrists, child development specialists, even teachers, these people have known for going on 30 years, the most effective ways to handle, difficult behaviors and all of that stuff. And for whatever reason, when I was growing up and certainly when I was becoming a parent, I was never exposed to any of that information. And so It's kind of like, people say like the kids don't come with a handbook. Well, they should, because we actually know like the best ways to work with the overwhelming majority of kids. We know the best way to handle so many things. And my job really, and what I wrote in Punishment Free Parenting, which is my book, is I just took all of that information that's widely accepted and widely available in the psychological community. And I said, why can't we just tell parents this stuff?
Right.
Why are we gatekeeping this? Why are we holding this back? Because this made my life so much easier. And I know that it can make basically all of our lives so much easier.
I love that. And I love how accessible your book is too, because I do think there are so many like psychologists, psychiatrists, and experts in the field that maybe talk a language that we don't all understand. But I love like that your dad that's like taking all the information that you received and but kind of translate it in a way for your like average parent to dissect and understand. And that's been super helpful for me. It was an easy read, fast read. I want to read it again. I was like highlighting and writing notes everywhere and like showing my husband. So I just love that. I'm wondering, how many kids do you have? Actually, I don't know.
Yeah, I have four kids. My kids range in age from 8 and a half down to 6 months old. So I have kids and I also,
I had 6 month old. Wow.
Yeah. I have a 6 month old. So I have a 6 month old little girl, and then I have three boys above her. And I also at one point had two under two. So I also, my second and my third are 19 months apart. So I've kind of gone through the ringer of the different, my oldest is highly sensitive. My third probably has ADHD, although he's three. So like, it's not helpful to diagnose anything like that at this point, but just kind of being in the field and understanding these things, like I see a lot of those characteristics. So all of this to say, like, I've in my own little cross section, I haven't experienced everything, but I've experienced a lot.
Yeah, that's helpful to name too, because I was curious, because I have twins and I have a teenage son, and they are all very different, and all different strategies look very different on each of them. And like my son's 14, and like none of this stuff, like punishment-free parenting, gentle parenting, whatever you want to call it, was even talked about when my son was little at all.
Right.
And so I'm curious, like in your parenting journey, was there a moment where you were like, okay, this isn't working, I need to try something different, that led you to start this punishment-free like exploration?
Yeah. You know, the short answer is yes. But I was lucky that it came so early. So my oldest was pretty, I would say, very challenging as a toddler. And it was not, I was fully ready to just kind of embrace, my parents did a great job by and large, to just kind of embrace the, like, I didn't suffer from like traumatic abuse or anything like that, or neglect. And some of the things I look back on now, the way that my parents raised me, I'm the youngest by 7 years. And so my parents were very much so like traditional 80s parents.
Yeah.
And some of my friends actually experienced some of the setbacks of 90s parenting that I didn't experience, like the helicoptering and like the oversight, like, being assessed on everything. My parents didn't really do that. So I'm grateful in many ways to my parents for, they threaded the needle pretty well with me. And that actually freed me up, when I didn't have all of this trauma to work through, not to say that they were punishment free by any means. When I didn't have a whole lot of trauma to work through, I could actually ask the questions from a practical standpoint, but I was ready to just kind of do the whole thing the way that my parents did and just kind of do that, you know, copy paste. And that's what most people tend to do. They either copy paste or they just swing to the opposite side if they really didn't like the way that they were parented. And it just so happened that while that was happening, while I had basically a 2 year old or really from 0 to 2, I went through three really transformative experiences in rapid succession. The first one is that I was getting a master's degree, and in the process of getting a master's degree, I was exposed to a lot of the psychological research that I then really dug into much deeper in the book. And so I learned how to read psychological research because I was in a counseling, a program that is not a counseling program, but has counseling. I took classes at the School of Professional Counseling. So I'm taking classes, master's degree level, like counseling classes. Then my dad got sick and he died. And I think that, it's really, I flew past that, but he got cancer and, he died in a year. Yeah. It was very traumatic for everybody in our family, but it makes you think and question in those moments to say, wait, hang on a second. What does it mean to be a dad who doesn't have a dad anymore? Right. And this was when my son was about one that he died. And then, right after that, I was in we became licensed foster parents. So I went through all of the practical training to become a foster parent. So when you combine, like you have this difficult, or I shouldn't say difficult, but this 2-year-old who has these kind of highly sensitive tendencies, explosive tendencies, highly emotional. You have this 2-year-old who has these explosive tendencies. You've taken master's degree level counseling courses. You're willing to ask a lot of the questions because now you've gone through this traumatic life-altering experience of losing a parent. And then you go and you get the practical hands-on knowledge from these foster care trainers, many of whom had been parenting foster kids who were deeply traumatized, had so many behavioral problems, far and away more than anything that I had ever been exposed to, for some of them 20, 30 years. And they're telling me, you know, hey, punishment doesn't work. This is not how you parent. And all of those things together clicked. And I went, holy smokes, actually, all of these different things are actually teaching me the same thing. Yeah. Like they're all saying the same thing, which is the lie that I believed, the myth that I believed, that the way to correct bad behavior is with control, compliance-oriented, punitive measures, doesn't work. And that sent me down a journey of basically taking the knowledge that I learned how to research effectively, not just like Googling stuff, but reading academic papers, you know, having interviews with psychologists. I took that level of like, okay, I really know how to research effectively at an academic level. And I applied that to parenting, and man, my eyes were opened that basically everybody agreed with the right way to parent. Anybody who knew anything about this from a technical standpoint, all agreed. And I was like, but why do none of us know that? That doesn't make any sense. And that was the beginning of the journey. And I stopped punishing my kids. I still occasionally, you know, backslide into some threats because that's all
we're gonna
of
talk
us.
About that. Yes.
But I know that it's ineffective when I do it, and I usually wind up apologizing
because I want to get into all that, because I do, as a 90s kid, 80s baby, I grew up with very much like traditional style parenting. I was spanked, timeouts, all the things. Don't do either one of those things, like timeouts or spankings, with my children. But I think before we get into that, I want to just make sure we're speaking the same language, because there's punishment-free parenting that you described. I had another coach like on the podcast last season. She called it parenting with understanding. We hear like gentle parenting, and I think
who was that on the podcast? Was that Marcella?
I had her last season, exactly.
Sure.
And then gentle parenting, I think, is like the buzzword that most of like the internet kind of attaches to, and I think it's gotten a little heat because people confuse that with permissive parenting. So, with all the parenting styles, can you kind of describe what punishment-free parenting is it different than gentle parenting? Like, what is it? You know?
Well, yeah. So Marcella calls it parenting with understanding.
Parenting with understanding.
You know, many people, Marcella's partner in crime is Rachel Rogers. She's another kind of big name social media influencer. She calls it like considerate parenting,
right.
respectful parenting. And then there's this whole conscious parenting movement, not just to add to the movement, but there's conscious parenting, and conscious discipline is really more of a spiritual aspect of parenting.
Yeah.
If you read Shefali's book.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I told you before.
Dr. Shefali So Dr. Shefali is a friend of mine. And so she's in the space and does this stuff, and her book is incredible. But to answer to your question, gentle parenting basically can mean any and all of those whenever it's used. And this is why I find it to be an unhelpful term. I think anything that does that lacks a clear understanding of what it is an unhelpful term. So when people say gentle parenting is not this, or it is this, well, there are no academic papers arguing the proper definition of gentle parenting. Right. So gentle parenting becomes a straw man in like a straw man fallacy, where basically you can argue that gentle parenting is whatever you don't or you do want it to be that serves your ideological worldview. So if you think that, you know, kids need more boundaries, you can say, well, gentle parenting is a no boundaries parenting. While, you know, Marcella or Rachel or many other people in the gentle conscious parenting movement would say, no, that's the opposite of what gentle parenting is. So is punishment-free parenting gentle parenting? Sure it is, if you define gentle parenting in the way that I do. The terms that people tend to use, terms that people tend to use that are a little bit more helpful tend to be permissive, authoritarian, and authoritative. The reason why I don't use those terms is because ask a person on the street what the difference between being authoritative and authoritarian is, and they're going to say, I thought you just said the same thing twice.
Right.
So really what we're talking about with punishment-free parenting, at least from my perspective, is parenting that, and I would say Shefali says this too, even though she approaches it from a more like metaphysical spiritual realm. Parenting that fundamentally seeks to understand what's going on with your child and respond effectively to that, while also, and especially with conscious parenting, seeking to understand internally what's going on with us as parents and not taking that for granted. And so as a person for you who was spanked, given timeouts, et cetera, knowing that experience is going to play into how you interact with your kids, and not just saying, well, that was a long time ago and that's not going to affect me. So in the briefest way to say this, what I argue for is essentially neuroscience parenting. It's parenting that says, hey, I am going to take all of the information into consideration, and instead of just assuming I know what I'm doing, I'm going to just ask the question, is this working? And really that's what I would say at its best, gentle parenting is parenting which does not assume and asks, is this working? Is this effective? Yeah. And the problem is, like many disciplines, there are people who take gentle parenting ideas and they become extremists with them, and they weaponize them against parents. And so the other bad rap that gentle parents get is that we judge everybody and we hate everybody. And honestly, as a person who is in the space and is one of the, I think you could say one of the voices that speaks into, you know, that's listened to a lot. I still get trashed on every video that potentially goes against some sort of gentle parenting ideal that I am unaware of.
It's wild how people have such a strong, I mean, it's not that wild, but people do have strong reactions when it comes to the type of parenting that other people do. I don't understand. Yes. Like, I'm like, do what you feel is best, but I'm trying to be as self-aware to do what I think is best. And I've learned from how I was raised, and I'm trying to make it my own, and I'm not perfect, but I'm trying. Right. And I think something that you're saying too, especially for me and a lot of, I think, millennial parents who weren't raised but punishment-free or consciously. And in theory, this sounds like the best thing. Sign me up. I can do it. Mm-hmm. And then we get into those moments where I'm like, girl, you on my last nerve, and I'm about to freak the F out.
Yeah. Yep.
What do you do? Like, how can someone break this cycle for someone who's not really seen a model? Like, What advice would you give those parents, which I think is the majority of my listeners?
Yeah. Well, so let me just start with what's happening in those moments with your child. Right. And then what we're going to see is that actually learning about what's happening with your child is going to explain exactly what's happening with you. Right. So I'm going to just forecast for you what's going on. Situation is that, you know, your child is like, I'm trying to think of something that's particularly triggering. So they're like wanting something, like they're whining about something, and then you give it to them, but then you like, oh, I want apple juice. I want apple juice. And you're like, no apple juice, not until whatever. And then no, I want it. And then you finally give it to them and they're like, it's in the pink cup. I wanted the blue
cup. Right. You didn't hand it this way. Yeah.
Exactly. You didn't give it to me. I don't want it. And then they throw it across the room. Right. And now you're just like, shut up. Right. You're just like triggered. Like you're Lauren's back here. She's just like, I'm mad thinking about it. So in those moments, what's happening is there's a fundamental underlying need that your child has, and they're trying to meet that need by coming to you and whining about apple juice. But ultimately, apple juice is not the fix for that need. There is something else going on behind the scenes. And what you're seeing is the symptom of the behavior, or the symptom of the need, which manifests as the behavior, right?
Right.
And what's happening in their brain, literally, when that's happening, is that the part of their brain that can predict the future, that can think about moral reasoning, what's right versus what's wrong, the part of their brain that's even self-aware to think about, why am I feeling this way? Why am I having these thoughts? All of that moral reasoning, logic, all of that goes offline. It goes dark. Right. So if you put them in an fMRI machine and you were tracking what areas of their brain are lit up, all of the parts of their brain that are thinking and reasoning shut down. And instead, the part of their brain that's older evolutionarily, that's at the core of their brain called the limbic system, that part of their brain is super active. It's the emotions, it's the feelings, and it's also to an extent the memory system. And it's the fight or flight system. It's the part of their brain that's searching and seeking constantly for that threat. It's the part of your brain that lights up when you see something out of the corner of your eye, and maybe it's nothing, but maybe it's something. Right? Mm-hmm. The part of your brain that's like on fire when you're walking through a dark basement and you know there's nothing there, but also you can't see. And so you're kind of like, but I'm going to run to the stairs now. Right? So that's the part of their brain that in those moments is lit up and is active. Okay. And so they're not thinking about the apple juice. What they're just feeling. They're just in their feelings. And they're not rational. And they're just emotional. Right? Then what we have to now understand is that if we react with any sort of hostility or punishment or aggression, we're just actually going to send them deeper into that. We're just going to validate for them that there is something to be afraid of. The problem is when our kids act that way, they actually trigger the exact same part of our brain that they are engaged in. And so it's very natural for us to match their energy. And now you're not thinking. You're not rationalizing. You're not considering what's moral or ethical. You're not thinking about what's long-term, the most effective way to handle this situation. Right. You're in your feelings. And the difference between your feelings and their feelings is you're a hell of a lot bigger than them. And you have a hell of a lot more power than them. So your feelings come out in very often, and I'm not saying you specifically, but all of us, our feelings come out in these kind of explosive ways. And there's a second layer to this, which is, the reason often why we get pushed into our feelings, as I talk about in the book, is because we were punished. And so that situation of our kid doing that thing that we would have gotten our, you know, hide tanned for, that situation now feels threatening because there's no time in our mind. There's no, well, this kid's whining and it's the year 2025. For them, for us in that moment, I should say, we're back in the 80s. We're back in the 90s where we're going, boy, if I had done this, this is what would have happened. And it feels scary. It like people don't like to hear this, but most people who react like, shut up, I'm going to come over.
Yeah.
Those people are afraid. That's the, in those moments, they're terrified because what they're experiencing is a recollection. It's essentially a traumatic memory of what happened to them. So all of this to say, in those moments, the absolute best thing to do is to shut up and just walk away for 10 seconds and get your brain back online and go, look, you're an adult. I'm the adult.
Yeah.
I don't need like apple juice, no apple juice.
Yeah.
Is not going to make a difference.
Yeah.
What's really going on here? Did this kid eat? Did this kid sleep last night? Did this kid just have a hard day at school? Asking all of those fundamental questions, which by the way, we would ask of adults. When you see somebody out in public acting a fool, you don't immediately assume like, oh, they're just trying to ruin it for everybody. Usually what we think is like, ooh, that person had a hard day. We don't do that with toddlers, even though ultimately that's what's going on. So really the concept of being punishment free, I don't think anybody would punish their kid if they could understand what's going on behind the scenes, because you would realize, well, why am I trying to handle some behavior? Why don't I just meet the underlying need that's causing the behavior to begin?
Taxes was paying so much to get your taxes done every single year. Now Taxes is getting a TurboTax expert who will beat the price you paid your pro last year, so you get the most money back this year. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Switch to an expert now at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Proof of amount paid may be required. Must sign up by 3/18 and file by 3/25. Subject to terms at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And that's really what all of this comes down to. Now, all of that's very heady because in the moment, it doesn't feel that way. In the moment, it feels triggering and stressful and anxiety producing for us. And we just want to react and lash out. But the thing that I try and tell parents, if you're trying to move towards this way, is the first thing you have to do is stop and go, hang on, is this helping anything? Because the truth is, when we react that way, our kid is more likely to throw the cup next time.
Mm-hmm.
Showed them what we do with our big feelings. We've just showed them a model of, hey, when you get upset, you rage, because that's what mom does. That's what dad does.
Right.
And so the more we kind of do the thing that we don't want our kid to do, the more that we react to our own deep emotional wounds by taking it out on them, the more we actually teach them that that's what they're supposed to do. And that's the fundamental thing.
I mean, I love that. And there's so many things that are like lighting up in my head, because one thing that I think you're naming that it just rings true, because I see it in my twin B and love her. She just has a lot of feelings and she's raised exactly like her twin. They're not the same person, but she has emotional outbursts and it's really hard for her to self-regulate, right? Mm-hmm. And there is no logic in those moments of speaking with her about anything. Like, hey, are you, I could be like, are you having big feelings? Go away. No. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'm trying to say the things I was taught to say. Like, but it's not reaching her brain yet. Like there's no like logical thing happening. However, normally this is what I've been doing, and I was kind of feeling guilty. Like I don't go away, but I just let her do it. I let her go through her whatever. And then once she calms down, she's ready to talk. And she always is able to articulate later. Like, well, I didn't like when daddy did this. I was like, okay, well maybe next time, how could you feel? I didn't know. Like, what could we do better next time?
Right.
And those are my proud parenting moments. I don't know if like ignoring is the case, but like, it's better than me be like, girl, like what are you, you know, like trying to reason with a toddler with logic when anybody's in an emotional state is not going to happen.
Right.
Same with me.
And that's where a lot of, you know, online parenting advice just falls flat, right? Like that's where a lot of that's where a lot of like the
gentle, and they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
That's where a lot of it is just like, and this is where I say like my frustration with the like Instagram gentle parenting thing is that a lot of us have great ideas that are so outside of the realm of actual reality.
Yeah.
Like in those moments,
probably the best thing you can do is no harm, right? Like just wait it out. Now, exactly. I think that when we say ignoring, right, what you're saying is not what was done to us, right? Ignoring, right. It's different to be like, I'm literally going to pretend like you don't exist versus right. I'm just not, this is unproductive. Yeah. I'm just going to let, no, go ahead. Just do your thing. And for some kids, they just need the space to feel it out and to do the thing. For other kids, they'll literally get trapped in a sympathetic nervous loop, which basically means that they are triggering themselves to keep the anxiety pumping. So they're freaking out. And then as they freak out emotionally, that actually like kind of makes validates that they have a reason to freak out, and then they keep going. And for those kids, I do have strategies in the book where I'm like, there are things that you can do that are kind of quote unquote brain hacks, the things that kind of made me famous on Instagram in the first place. There are kind of brain hacks that you can do where you can kind of force their prefrontal cortex back online to say, hey, let's calm down here. Not because you're inconvenient, not because I don't like when you have emotions, but because I'll tell you, with my 8-year-old, he's like, get me out of this. He's like, I don't want to feel like this. I can't get out. And that's there are those times too. I think for most parents, they probably don't have to do that. But for many parents, you know, that can be a helpful tool. And so there are ways to do that without punishment. I think that the challenge is, most people think the way that you get a kid to shut up is to go, you know, I'm going to whatever to you.
I'm going to take this away.
I'm going to, you know, never coming again. I'm going to do this. And what will happen is that kid will stop the behavior, and then they'll go, it worked. But what we know is that just because a behavior goes underground does not mean that it's resolved. And really the parents who go, you know, I get the comment on any video that I do, like, here's how you stop a tantrum. Somebody will be like, yeah, you threaten them with a belt, and then all of a sudden the tantrum ends. And it's like, so I appreciate that kids will do anything to survive, including suppressing their emotions, including bottling it up, including being terrified of their parents. The question is that how we want them? Do we think that that's actually leading to any sort of health and wholeness in any sort of realistic way? And the answer is no, because it actually makes kids, as I kind of talk about in the book, makes kids self-obsessed, because then they're just constantly worried about, am I in trouble? Am I going to get in trouble? And that's not really how we want kids to be thinking. We want kids to be thinking a little bit more in the like, hey, how is this right? Is this wrong?
Yeah.
And the punishment does not actually teach kids to think about right and wrong. It teaches kids to think about whether or not they'll be hurt or harmed for a given activity that they're doing.
100%. And that's just like, that's such a aha moment too, because I think about how I was raised, and people will say, well, I was spanked and I turned out fine. But like, I challenge the person saying that, are you really, do you have emotional outbursts? And is it really hard for you to regulate? Are there sometimes you see like sides of yourself that you don't like, or like, do you, or do you people please? Do you hide like your emotions? Like all these things I think can be byproducts of someone that you can develop these skills as a child. And that's what we're trying to do, is like figure out how to develop these adults.
Well, just think about that response. Just think about the response, right? I turned out fine.
Yeah.
Means at its core, I am unwilling to take the perspective of another person. Like if you met somebody and you said, you know, I'm trying to go vegan, right? For example, right? I'm not giving you a specific example, but like, okay, I'm trying to go vegan right now, and I felt so much better. I felt like I have so much more energy now, or better yet, you know, I've been going for a run every morning and it's really been giving me a ton of energy and I'm feeling great. If a person reacted to that, like, well, I don't run and I'm fine.
Yeah.
You would go, okay. Oh, there's something here. That's a weird, that's a weird way to react to that. So this is like,
why are you so,
reaction, that defensiveness is all of the evidence that I need to know that you didn't turn out fine.
Yeah.
Because you're fundamentally unable to even consider a worldview that includes not hitting kids.
Yeah. And self-obsessed, like we kind of just spoke about. I'm actually curious, one thing you said, and you don't have to go into it in detail, but I want to recall it. These brain hacks, because now I'm like, maybe my child Shiloh, but a couple that come to mind, like I'm literally like, wait, do I do that? Because I do like logic sometimes, or I try to make something fun to get them to do it, sure. to distract them from what, sure. you know, those are types of things I've done. But I'm right. curious what yours were.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. Yeah. So any sort of like executive function thing where you can kind of get them thinking. So the easiest one I like to do is I'll just either do something silly, yeah. which just humor kind of can diffuse, or you could, the other thing you can do is you can actually, this is like a really, people are like, you actually do this? I'm like, yeah, I do this all the time. I'll be like, we're playing the color game. Which yeah. means we're going to go and we're going to look for out in the real world, all of the colors of the rainbow. We're going to go yeah. through red, orange, yellow, blue, green, purple. And like, we're going to yeah. go through one at a time. And people are like, why does that help? And it's like, no, because literally the part of their brain that's needed to take occipital information from the back of their brain and then give it the color identification to identify a color and give it a name, that actually forces multiple parts of their brain to light up, to activate. Yeah. And it basically grabs the keys away from the limbic right. system, because you would never do that in an actual life or death situation. Like you and I are back 200,000 years ago, you know, we're living in a cave and yeah. a saber-toothed tiger walks up on us. I'm not sitting around being like green, blue, orange.
Right.
I'm running like for the hills. And so when their brains can do those kind of seemingly foolish, silly things, it's actually telling their brain, you got nothing to, like, this is not life or death.
Yeah.
The apple juice doesn't need to be in the blue cup. Like, this is not going to kill you. And right. so that can be a really effective one. Breathing techniques. So a lot of adults yeah. use these, but breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth, that's its own brain hack. We know that kids are more stagnant than they've ever been in history. And so moving, yeah. just dance, party, outside, move yeah. around, get moving outside. Any sort of proprioceptive input. So proprioceptive is understanding where your body is in space. This is especially helpful for kids who are neurodivergent, ADHD, maybe ASD. This is something like, you know, use your muscles, like push yeah. something that's like causes you to like engage your muscles, find yourself in space. Like deep pressure hugs can work. Why? Yeah. Because it's, again, it's stimulating to the proprioceptive system. So these are all like things that I could explain to you what individual systems they're activating. Oh, that one activates the vagus nerve, which is the 10th right. cranial nerve. That one activates the proprioceptive input in the vestibular, finding yourself in space. And like, we could go through each one of like why in their brain, yeah. but ultimately all of them, what they're doing is they're telling their brain, this is not a life or death situation. The problem that most parents have with the brain hacks is they go, oh, I'm teaching my child that this is not life or death. Therefore, if I say to them, this is not life or death, that'll work.
They should understand, right? Yeah.
Which is the exact not opposite the because you have to get their body to fix their brain. You can't get their brain to fix itself. And so what's happening is in those moments, it's like you walk up to your partner and you go, hey, was just downstairs and I smell gas. And they're like, there's no gas. You didn't smell any gas.
Gaslighting.
What are you going to do? You're yeah. going to go, no, I did smell gas. And until you right. go downstairs and tell me you don't smell gas, we're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. There's never gas downstairs. That's crazy. Yeah. Now you're like, if you don't go downstairs right now and check the gas, we're going to all die.
Right.
Right.
Now we're mad about this. Yeah, exactly.
So that's the difference between like parents invalidating their child's experience versus the actual effective brain hacks that don't invalidate the experience. And so I always say, start with, I get why you're mad. Let's play the color game. Let's get our brain back online. Then we can solve some problems.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh, the color game would work. Yeah.
One. Yeah. Go ahead.
The color game specifically would work for, I'm like going to take that and go with my twin B because she's very artistic, emotional, but she's obsessed with coloring and I can see this working. I'm excited to like, and I think it's also based on your child, like know your child, maybe like a big hug or whatever you called it might not be what they want. They might be a space. So it's very helpful and it's nuanced too. Like I do like the sentiment you're saying about how gentle parenting can sometimes say, this is the all-encompassing way of doing things, or people interpret it that way, right? Where like, that's where we get into trouble. I'm curious. I have toddlers and I have teens. Mm-hmm. And my teen, you haven't hit this stage yet, John. I will check on you.
I do work with teens. I work with teens. So I have some insight into the teenage brain.
And I didn't expect to go here, and I know there's a lightning round I want to do at the end, but I'm really curious because I don't understand how punishment-free works with my teen. And I'm more patient with my toddlers because I just am, but it's harder for me to do it with him. Like
totally.
Cause they feel like an adult, but they're not, but like the slamming of the door, the disrespect back. I'm like, bro, I will like, you know, and it's just hard. Like, how do I not punish? I'm taking away your phone. Stop it. Cause I said, those things have come out of my mouth. So what does that look like when they get older and they try?
So, okay. So first and foremost to all your listeners who don't have teenagers yet, teenagers do hit this stage. That said, one of the really interesting things that I have found in the parenting, and I don't mean to like shame anyone in any way. One of the interesting things that I have found is as I've talked to people who are like, have been in this parenting space for, since they were, their kids were toddlers. So somebody like Tina Payne Bryson, who has teenagers now, but she literally wrote The Whole Brain Child more than 10 years ago. So she's known this stuff for a long time, right? She's like, oh, all ages are hard. All stages are hard. And I go, compared to your friends, how hard are your kids as teenagers? And she's like, oh yeah, they're really easy. So just understand, that for your twins, the fact that you're doing this now, you are, I don't want to say you're reaping what you sow, but you teach a child emotional regulation at 2, they have emotional regulation at 12.
I see.
Because you're still building there. So, but what do we do if our kid's 14 and we're already in this power struggle, right?
10, 11.
So first thing, this exact same neural process that your child, kids go through, humans, I should say, go through a neural process that we call like advanced neuroplasticity or neural pruning. This is where they're building more neural pathways, neural webs, and they're getting rid of tons of neural pathways and neural webs. And we know that this is a really dysregulating experience. And so we give toddlers all of this, you know, we should give toddlers all of this leeway to go, it's really hard to be a toddler. Like your brain is literally changing more in a day than an adult brain changes in a month. Like you are just, you're being tossed around. First time that happens in a really, really big way is in toddlerhood, where they get rid of like, I don't know what it is, 10% of their neural connections. Second time it happens is when they're teenagers. So a toddler brain and a teenage brain are fundamentally very similar in what's happening. Third time it happens is when you have a baby. So understanding that the exact thing that you're facing with your toddler is also what you're facing with your teenager. So giving them that just understanding. The nice thing about teenagers though is so many things that I say do this with a toddler, like they don't work unless your toddler has a level of verbal processing, a lot of my tips and tools, like you tell a toddler, like, let's find all the red things. They don't know what color red is. That's going to be a tricky one, right?
Right.
The second thing with the thing about teenagers is you actually have opened up a whole world of tools that I don't talk about with toddlers. So when you get to the end of the book and you talk about like perspective taking and role playing, like that works from like age 7 on, but that really works with a teenager. So here's what I do, right? So when a parent comes to me and they go, I'm trying to get control, and they're just pushing back on control. The first thing I say is, so why do you want control? And they're like, because like they need to know, like they need to understand like that you need to respect adults. And what's control? How's control going to teach them to respect adults? Ultimately, we have to reframe our goals, and we have to, especially with teenagers, we have to look forward into the future, and we have to say, what do we want them to be at 30? And how is what we're doing now impacting that? So do we want them at 30 to, in order for them to get anything done, somebody take their phone away and say, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to take this.
Right.
At 30, we know that's not what's going to happen. So instead we have to go, well, what would work then? And the answer is probably sitting them down and going, hey, so you were really rude to me. And I'm wondering what I did to earn that, or what happened earlier in the day that caused that. And I'm not mad at you for being rude. I didn't like it.
I'm not mad at you for being rude, but can you just tell me what's going on? Yeah. She's like, no, I'm not going to tell you. You already know. No, I'm really sitting here and I don't know. And it makes me feel like I want to just lash out at you, but I know that's not going to help. Yeah. And so now we're like going back, well, what about a kid who doesn't do their homework? What kid doesn't want to do their homework? Oh, all the kids. Why? Is it because they don't see any value in this whatsoever? Hey, why aren't you finding any value in what's going on right now? Why aren't you seeing the value in this? And the collaborative process with teenagers becomes this thing where if you realize that your child has your teenager has more invested in the process of them becoming a mature adult, they think that you're just trying to control them. That's all they think. Right. If you get to your kid with the understanding that, hey, look, I actually just want you to be as successful as you can be, but I'm not going to force you to be. So you and me got to work together. What's going to work for you? I just need you to leave me alone for the first 15 minutes after I get home so I can decompress. Cool. You want to set a timer? Like all of a sudden the kid has power and the kid's like,
and they feel listened to and like, yeah, that's huge. Like my son sometimes says, you guys don't listen to me. I'm like, I'm listening. Or you, the things I think, and I want to name this because I think it goes back. I love the comparison of toddlers and teens, but like, I feel like sometimes the consequences, the natural consequences of them just figuring out are too big. Like if a toddler doesn't want to brush their teeth, they will get cavities. So I'm going to threat or bribe you to get to brush your teeth. If your teenager does not do their homework, they will not get into college and you will not get a job. Like that's how my brain works. Right. So in order to get this result, I'm like, if you don't do this, you know, screen time. And then he does it. But yeah, I think in those moments, like how do you, I don't know.
So the problem becomes we think too short term. So we go, if you don't do your homework now, you're not going to get into college. And that may be true, right? Hear me, Lauren. It may be true.
Yeah.
However, how many kids totally bomb out their first semester because the only reason that they could be successful was that their parents were making them be successful. So instead we say, look, if I keep taking away your phone, you may get into college, but the second you're there, there's not going to be a switch that is thrown where now all of a sudden you can do all of these things on your own. And this is the crazy part about punishment-free parenting. Actually, punishment-free parenting raises more respectful, more resilient, more considerate, more kind kids. And people are like, how? You're not punishing them for their bad behavior. You're right, but they are experiencing the consequences of it. And so I would rather, and this is like something that you can kind of go through right now at 14, like if I fail freshman biology, that may affect my transcript. Yeah. But is failing freshman biology an acceptable consequence when we realize that down the road, it means that we're not going to fail junior biology or junior physics. And as a result, we're going to be more, able to achieve at a high level in college. And this is where parents, I think we get into our mind we're too petty with our goals. We think too short term with our goals. We go, I want my kid to do this at 18.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You want because why do you care if your kid goes to college? So that they're successful later. Well, if you're the only reason that they're successful now, then that's the only reason that they're going to be successful on the road. So you don't actually care. And this is the thing, like most parents are just surviving. Yes. And that's the problem.
That's the problem.
We can't survive. We have to be people who thrive. We have to be people who actually get the goals that we want. And ultimately what we have to realize is if we projected our goals up into the point where our child's 30 and they have a family and a home and whatever, like the very things that we're doing now are undermining our ultimate goals with that child.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Oh my gosh, John, this has been amazing. Okay. We've talked about a lot today. If there's one piece of advice that you could give listeners that have heard this episode or are now very much interested in reading your punishment-free parenting, which I can't recommend enough, what would you say to someone who is just maybe starting their journey or listening for the first time today?
Yeah, very simple. Second chapter is called Get Curious, Not Furious.
I'm
glad that you love
your titles. Yeah.
It's called Get Curious, Not Furious. Ultimately, the chapter is about the fact that you if you're going to parent effectively, you have to first begin from a posture of curiosity. And it's exactly what we're talking about with the teenagers, exactly what we're talking about with the toddlers. What's going on here? Why aren't we getting the results that we're looking for? Not how can I achieve those results through my own actions, but how can we get that? And if you start with curiosity, you're going to realize exactly as I did that the punishment, that the threats, the bribes, all of that is fundamentally ineffective.
Yeah, 100%. How can people find you on Instagram? Where can they follow along? Like, tell our listeners where they can find you.
Yeah. At Whole Parent on everything. You're going to have me back for the lightning round, by the way, Lauren.
I know.
Out of time for that. But at Whole Parent. And you can also go to wholeparentacademy.com. And get my book wherever books are sold.
Yes.
And please leave me a review. Let me know how you like it.
Yes, we will definitely link that below. We're going to have a part two for the lightning round. But also, there's some stuff you touched on with siblings and a lot of twins, right? And I would love to just talk to that. We didn't get to that today, y'all, but stay tuned. Yep. But John, you've been an awesome guest. Thank you for being on Twin Mama Podcast.
And that's a wrap for this episode of That Twin Mama Podcast. But before you go, let me tell you how you can keep this village growing. First things first, are you subscribed? If not, what are you doing? Hit that subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening so you never miss a new episode. We're streaming on all major platforms, so let's make it official. Secondly, let's stay connected on socials. Follow us on That Twin Mama Podcast on Instagram for short form relatable content, and follow us on YouTube at That Twin Mama Podcast for entire episodes in all of their glory. And lastly, and this is a big one, if you liked what you heard today, please leave a review. Your 5-star love means so much to me and the team behind the scenes and helps us to keep going. It also helps us to find parents like you who need to listen to these episodes, which mean the world. So until next time, take care of you, take care of your crew, and remember, you're doing an amazing job. See you soon. Peace.